All right, we'll resume that.
You ready?
I am ready. Thank you.
Okay. We took a boat back to Miami to pick up supplies and people. We picked up approximately 25 people, and we loaded the boat with supplies, and we went back to Guyana. On the boat, the people that we picked up was my mother, my brother, my sister, my dad, and about 20 other people. When we got to Guyana, my dad and my mom were in charge of the project in Guyana. And when we started actually working and building Jonestown, we did it as, I'm not going to call it a committee, I'm calling it the group. You know, everybody that was there all had a voice in what we were doing.
All right.
But my mom and dad were in charge of it. They were in charge of buying material, food, so on and so forth. Hope that answered your question.
It does. Thank you very much. It does. And going forward, what was your impression? How old were you? I don't believe I've asked that.
When I went over, I was 21.
Okay. And were you married?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Myself and Debbie, we got married in 1971.
All right. Now, were you a part of the temple when you got married?
Oh, yes. And she was part of the group of people that we picked up in Miami.
Okay.
And to answer your question, was she a part of the temple? She grew up in the temple.
Oh, all right.
From the time she was like maybe, I want to say 5 or 6 years old.
All right. Is Debbie still with us?
Yeah, she was when we got to Guyana. The temple always did, from what I know, everything was done integrated. There was always a white person, and there was always a black person. And in Guyana, Debbie was the black liaison, if you want to call her that, from the temple. Her and this woman named Paula Adams, they did, you know, the contact of the government, made sure of the visas and customs, and they would start buying supplies or whatever. And so Debbie's main function was in Georgetown.
Okay. And in building upon the integration, what was your overall impression of People's Temple's philosophy?
Well, that goes back to the way that I was raised. My mother raised us where there was no color. And she made a point to raise, there was four of us, four kids. And she made a point to raise us that way. And there was certain times during my growing up where she told people, basically, you can get out of my house if you want to talk that way, you know, racially. And my father was one of them. So when I when I started going to the temple, the very first time was in Indianapolis. This was before they moved to California. And I was amazed about how black and white people were together, because my life was basically segregated. The high school I went to had one or two black kids in it, you know, and I was just amazed. And then when I got involved several years later, I went to a youth night and I could not believe how people of color could be together, because I wasn't raised that way. I mean, you know, watching the TV back in the 60s and seeing all the segregation, it blew me away. I've never had a problem with it. I never will. And I believe in integration. I really do. It's the only way we're going to get along. That's my opinion.
So did you understand this to be, so basically, did you understand this to be a socialist or communist type community?
Later on, not in the beginning, but later on, then I understood what was going on. And to this day, I believe in it.
So what did you think of it at the very beginning? I mean, you later on understood. So what was the impression at the very beginning?
It was a good thing. Okay. They were against the war in Vietnam. They were against how people were economically treated, I guess you could say. How, you know, we have such, you got the rich and then you got the poor. And the poor is basically, you know, real lower class white people, and basically all of the black community, Latin and Asian communities. And I believed it in, and I still do, the way that they say, you know, disagreed with the way our system is.
Okay. So do you feel there's a lot of comparative about the movement back in 1960s and 70s that is reflective of what's going on today?
Somewhat. Yeah, I do. I really do, with what's going on, especially in our country right now. Absolutely. And I even have had talks with different people, because, you know, it's like, oh, George Floyd or this, that, or, I said, hold up a minute, man. It's just not a matter of this just happened. This was going on in the 50s, before the 50s, in the 60s, where I remember watching on TV on the national news, where in Alabama and Louisiana and all them, where they would turn the dogs and fire hoses onto black people. You know, this isn't nothing new what's going on. It's just now, hopefully, people are so tired of it that it will change.
So you yourself were one of the first groups of six down there, and it was, from your readings, it was basically a plot of land out in the middle of nowhere that you had to cut your way through to get to at that time. So I would imagine everyone's participation was...
Is what? I didn't hear that.
I imagine everyone's participation mm-hmm. was as valued and necessary as the next person's. So there wasn't a lot of wiggle room to be selective about who did what job?
The way we did it, now, I don't know who selected the people to come down. I have no clue. Okay. I know that myself, I was asked to go over in the first group because there was a group of eight people that left. One of those, and I was very close to all of the people who left the group, who left the People's Temple. One of them was my sister. And I lived with a few of the people. We were starting a commune. And so when this group left, it scared Jim Jones that they would try to contact me and other people to leave. So he asked if I wanted to go to Guyana. But other than that, when we first got down there, the first group of 25 people or so, we had one guy who was a farmer. We had another guy who was into agronomy, another guy who was somewhat in construction. I mean, we had a diverse group of people that somebody knew something, and that's how we built Jonestown.
Okay. Did you feel that everybody had equal opportunities within the organization, within the group?
In the early days?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
And as time progressed?
For the first, up until the mass of people came over, they would send us down a couple of people at a time. But when the mass group of people came down, that's when everything changed as far as building Jonestown. We had a good part of it already built to a certain extent, but when the mass of people came down, then it was like the ones of us had been down there who knew the problems, because the problems down there aren't the same problems that you have here. I mean, you can't run out in Guyana, you have a machine breakdown, you can't run out to the hardware store. I mean, we were, however you want to look at it, we were a day trip by boat to get to where we were, or an airplane trip. But if you needed a part, that means somebody had to go into Georgetown, get a part, and which, you know, you're talking worse than a third world country where they just didn't have everything. So it was very hard to, in the beginning, to build Jonestown. And when we came up to a problem, it wasn't a thing where, like I said, you couldn't go to a store. There was no stores. We sit there and we try to figure out the problem by ourselves, and we did the best we could. And when these people came down, when the mass of people started to come down, they didn't understand that. They thought, oh, you can just go buy a part. Well, there you can't. So there was a lot of conflict after the large group of people started coming down.
All right. Did that conflict also lead to suspicion within the group? Do you think it was negative in the group's perception overall of each other?
No, I don't. Not a suspicion. It was just, you know, like, it was like, look, you just got here. You don't understand how things work. And it was like, oh, we're here to fix things. Well, you can't do that. You know, you can't do it the way you want to. And it was just a conflict between the new people and the ones of us that had been down there for a couple of years. But I don't, suspicion, I don't go with suspicion.
All right. So jumping forward a little bit, because I would like to get into the intricacies of how Jonestown was built.
Sure.
As far as as a person, I'd be very interested in how did you get the wood in there to build the buildings? How did you consider a septic and water and actually develop that in the middle of a jungle?
It was a lot of fun, I'll tell you that. I understand, everything is from my perspective. Somebody who's still alive who was down there with me when we were building it, they might not say how I feel, which I understand. It's not for everybody. It wasn't for everybody. And that's, anyway, what we did was, we, in the beginning, the first thing was to gain access into where Jonestown was built. And from the main road, now you're talking, you don't have, at that time, there's no private, there was no private people or companies. It was the government. of Guyana. So everything was like a government road or the government housing. But when we first got there, the government gave us, they had a, I forget what they called them. It was like a youth, what am I trying to say? They had barracks that they had built for youth people that were trying to do what we did, farm and try to make it. But it failed. So here's these buildings that were not being used. So in the early days, we stayed in these barracks, which was in a small town called Port Kaituma. And what we did was we traveled every day approximately 3.5 miles to the beginning of our road where Jonestown Road started. And I'm sure you've seen the picture where there's a lot of bananas and plants and there's a big sign, "Welcome to Jonestown," or whatever it says. From that point where the government road, where our road met the government road, the Jonestown was 3.5 miles, and it was just, the first time I saw it, was pure raw jungle. It's something that you only see in National Geographic. First time I went in, they had a group of the indigenous tribe or people. They're called Amerindians. And I had Amerindians in front of us and Amerindians behind us. And they were, all of them were, they had machetes, and they were following a trail that a surveyor and these Indians had cut. And after we went in to the 3.5 miles, the surveyor looked at us and said, "This is your center of Jonestown." And so the way we cleared the jungle to get the jungle cleared away was the Indians, they cut all the trees down, and they did it in sections. And once the trees and everything was cut down, they let it lay on the ground for some days to dry, to get rid of some of the green leaves and all that kind of stuff. And then they set fire to it. After they did the whole 3.5 miles this way, then I went in with a bulldozer and I cleared our road away. And I had a path that they had put stakes on to give me the center of where, and it was 1,000 feet on each side of the center of the road. And I cleared all of the trees off, and then I built the road into Jonestown. When the road ended at the center of Jonestown, they had cut 30 acres, cleared all the trees. They cut all the trees down and all that. And by this time, what we had done, we had the Indians build us a building. And it was made out of trees, poles. We made it where we had 6 bunks in it, or not bunks, but 6 beds. We made our stove. There was a spring real close to where that place was in the first part of us being there, where we would get our water from. As far as taking care of our needs, sanitation, we'd just go hang it over a log, take care of it, and then we'd be back in business. And that was in the early days. Once we cleared the 30 acres, then what we did was we started plotting or planning what we were going to do. And we would go into, most of us were living in Port Kaituma at the time because we didn't have housing for everybody. While this was going on, we were building our first building so we could have everybody live in Jonestown and not live in Port Kaituma. We would map out, just hand draw things and say, this is where we want the garden. This is where we want to build a well. This is where we want to build an outhouse, that type of thing. And we just did it on a whim. We didn't know what we were doing. We just did it. And that's how we built Jonestown. Hope that answered your question.
It did. Thank you. Because I was really curious about that, how things actually got started down there from nothing. And you had made mention that it was a pioneering effort, pioneering attitude. And boy, it sounds like it sure was, sir. Mike. Caught myself.
But we had, it was the surveyor who, his name was Bernie Matthews. And he knew, because that area where we were at, it had a lot of ravines in it. You had high ground, then you had low ground. And so he told us, he would show us different spots, like where we raised the livestock, where we kept the chickens and the pigs and the cows, was about a mile and a half from the center of Jonestown. And it was on a high spot. So we cleared that away, and we knew that was going to be where the livestock was. And we did another area where we knew we were going to put the little cottage, we call them cottages, little cottages, the big buildings that we built. We knew where we were going to put everything, but it was just sitting down and saying, okay, this is how we're going to do it. And then everybody had a voice in it. The guy who was a farmer who was in livestock, he would say, hey, I need to do this, this, and this. I need this building built. I need to do that, or whatever it was, and we took care of it. The guy who was into gardening and plants and that type of thing, he said, I need a building for this. I need to be able to do, you know, different things. So we took care of that. And that's how we did it. And I'm going to tell you, none of us, not one of us, had experience in this kind of stuff before.
Out of curiosity, and this probably is just a tangent that I'm going on, did you have problems with animals from the jungle coming into the camp and upsetting the livestock or the food?
There was two times that we had problems, and it really wasn't a problem the first time. They have a group of monkeys down there called howler monkeys. And when they roar and they make one, it's a scary sound, really, especially at night. And you could hear these monkeys way off in the distance. And in the early days, the only thing that we had for electricity was what they called a kerosene wiki. And it was like you take a small jelly jar, let's say. You take the lid and you cut a hole in the lid. You take some material to make a wick out of. You take wrap the wick in aluminum and set it down in the kerosene and you light it. So when we were done at night, all we would do, and that's when we only had the building for six people. When we were done playing cards or dominoes or whatever it was, we'd blow out our wickies and we'd go to sleep. Well, this one night, these monkeys came right up to our building, and it scared the bejeebs out of all of us. We didn't know what, you know, because we didn't know what the monkeys were going to do or anything else. But those things, I was sitting there and you're shaking or whatever, and you, man, did you guys hear that? That thing's right outside outside the building, because we had no walls on the building. It was, you're out in the, it's just stuff you see in National Geographic. That's all I can say. That was one time. The second time is when we started getting pigs, we had a problem with vampire monkey bats. And so we had to find out a way of how to get rid of the bats. So we had somebody going to Georgetown. They did research. They talked to people about it. And we found out how to get rid of the vampire bats. And we did.
How'd you get rid of them?